It's Wednesday, February 15th, 2017. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. This week, we're coming to you a couple days early as we prepare to head to Harrisburg, PA this weekend for the annual Keystone Progress Summit. We'll give you a little preview of that, and we hope that we'll see some of you out there. That would be freaking awesome. Come on over to our table. We'll have a table set up, and we'll have pins, and we'll have a good chunk of our writers there, but we'll get into that a little bit in the show. It's only been a few days since we were last on air, but that hasn't stopped the insanity in D.C., that's for sure. This week's news has been dominated by the resignation of Trump's National Security Advisor, former General Michael Flynn. And the news keeps breaking around Flynn. After the new reporting points to improper communication between Flynn and other Trump cronies and Russian officials during the presidential campaign. I mean, we all knew that, right, folks, right? But now we've actually have some hard evidence. This is fantastic. But meanwhile, right here in PA, PA Senator Toomey jumps full-throatedly into the Trump camp with all the gusto he can muster and attempts to deflect independent investigations away from Trump. Net neutrality is in jeopardy as Trump's pick to run the FCC declares war on Obama-era consumer protections, and Trump is finding unlikely allies among civil rights organizations in Trump's efforts to cut net neutrality. What is up with that? Students at Pennsylvania State System Universities launch a campaign for $15 an hour minimum wage on campuses as students from the new PA Student Power Network flex their collective muscles across the Commonwealth. Tuesdays with Toomey keeps the pressure on. This past week, they focused on issues affecting the LGBTQ community. Sean Kitchen was there and stayed to talk with organizers following the event. And security concerns in the state capitol as drunk guy breaks into the Capitol building and discharges a fire extinguisher. These are the times we're living in, folks. Now, remember, we need you to help keep progressive activist media going strong. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $2 a month. Simply go to RagingChickenPress.org and look for the support and membership tab. You can click become a member. We're also on Patreon. And if you want to become a member through Patreon, that's fantastic. Just click be a patron on Patreon under the same tab. Or if you're not quite ready to become a member, you can make a one-time donation by clicking donate. And for a limited time, you can also pick up one of our exclusive t-shirts. The 2017 is the new 1984 or the Richard Spencer Project, which is you just got to check it out to see it. It's a fantastic graphic that I'm very personally proud of. Right? And that's on over at Teespring. We'll have links to that down below, and you can check us out on Facebook there. They're going to be available for about the next 4 or 5 days. So and they're starting to go quickly, and there's only limited time. These are exclusive to Raging Chicken, and proceeds from all t-shirt sales go directly to support our awesome team of writers. So please pick them up. And we're going to be launching kind of yet another exclusive design coming up real soon. So stay tuned for that. And out in Harrisburg at the Keystone Progress Summit, we're going to have a whole bunch of pins available thanks to our new button making machine. So if you want you're out in Harrisburg area, please stop by our table. That's going to be in the Hilton. That's the Keystone Progress Summit. And we'll have a table up there with pins and all sorts of fun stuff. So, folks, we are still digging in for 2017 and all that is Trumplandia. And really, we do need you. We need the progressive community to help us deepen, pull no punches, progressive media that will hold power accountable. So if you could find it in you, become a member today. All right. So, Sean, once again, here we are, and I don't know where to begin.
Well, the legislature is not in session, and so that means the rights of immigrants and women will be safe for the next 6 weeks. So I guess that's a good place to start, right? Am I wrong?
No, okay, yeah. You're starting on a hopeful note, that's good, and then go down into despair later on in the program. I guess that works. And this is that we have basically the Senate has passed the SB3, right, which we talked about in the program last week. But that's just basically in a holding pattern right now until they're back in session. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. There's still talk about the bill being moved in the middle of March when it comes back today. When the House comes back, they'll be back March 13th, and I think some demonstrations might be planned for that week. I'm not too sure yet.
Not sure. I would basically count on it. I would mark your calendars on that if you're a legislator that are out there. You better kind of, you know, put out some cookies because there's going to be some people that are going to be visiting your offices. That's for sure.
So yeah, especially those 22 Democrats that we named, those 22 Democrats, the three leaders and the 19 of them or 21 of them who actually voted for the bill the last time around. I know there's been some pressure going into their offices. I don't know exactly what. And then I know some of the Tuesday with Toomey and the Indivisible folks were making some phone calls this week. So,
Keep on calling. Go ahead. Sorry.
Calling your representative over this, even call leadership, call Mike Hanna's office, call Dermody's office, call Markosik's office, even though if they're not your state representatives, call them and tell them that there will be consequences if these Democrats and yourself vote for this bill.
Absolutely. So, you know, keeping on the positive side of the ledger for the moment, you just mentioned the Tuesday with Toomey's. Now, this past week, Tuesday with Toomey has not let up, and they keep on coming week after week to all of Toomey's offices across the state. And you were there this past week, isn't that right?
Yes.
So, what was that? What was the event like this week?
Yesterday people came out in support of the LGBTQ community. There's also, so Equality, spokeswoman, chairwoman from Equality Pennsylvania was there. They focused on how repealing the ACA would affect the LGBTQ community. I got a video of that lady reading a letter on behalf of Ted Martin, executive director of Equality Pennsylvania, that was addressed to Senator Pat Toomey outside the federal building. So that video is up on our Facebook page if you want to listen to the whole thing. If you want to listen to that. And also it was time for people to share their stories. There was a bunch of like high schoolers in the crowd too this time around, which was different. People came down from Sealands Grove, from other progressive smaller towns throughout the area in central Pennsylvania, and they shared their stories. Mothers, parents, and also high schoolers of how they have been how the coming out process has affected them or their family members. There was a high school girl that spoke, and she gave a really good, she spoke for a few minutes, first time ever speaking in front of a group of people, and basically explaining that how like she almost committed suicide because of this, being bullied or going through that process. She's doing a really nice art project with a mural. People's names are going to be on that mural who support the LGBTQ rights or people who are members of that community themselves. And then it was a pretty interesting experience. Definitely one first time I've experienced something like this before, because afterwards the LGBTQ Center in Harrisburg, which is a couple blocks away from my apartment, opened up their doors to all the activists. And so maybe like a handful of us went down. We had a really nice, thoughtful conversation with people who are part of that community and part of the center and the outreaches and the stuff they have to deal with and they have to organize in central Pennsylvania. So it was pretty interesting. I felt like I learned a lot.
Well, you know something, it's, we keep on hearing this across the state in a whole different kind, a range of different venues where what has become one of the most powerful aspects of the organizing that's going on is these sharing of stories and experiences, right? Kind of among a broader group of people. You know, a lot of times when we're not in crisis mode, like we are so often these days, activists are always considered like, you know, how do you build coalitions? How do you kind of ensure that you have more people that are included? And I think right now we're seeing the answer to how you ensure that there is broader inclusiveness. And the fact is that you organize and you get people together and you create scenarios where people are going to get an opportunity to share your stories. I had an opportunity to talk on Monday with some folks that just launched the brand new PhillyProgressives.com, an amazing website, and Raging Chicken is partnering with them, and kind of heard about some of the stories that, you know, a lot of the folks that are involved with both that organization and a bunch of the organizations that they're affiliated with, or they're connected with at least, these are people that are not like professional activists. These are people that are out there for the first time feeling like, you know, they can no longer hold their tongue. They have to get out and speak out. And this is, so this is, you know, again, you know, on the positive side of the ledger, this This is pretty amazing work that's going on. And I can only hope that that's going to only strengthen the organizing.
Yeah. It's definitely a unique movement in itself. It's not something I've seen here in Pennsylvania before. I know next week we're going to be talking about the First Amendment, and there's going to be refugees there talking about religion and stuff like that. You know, people who are infected by the Muslim ban. So every week there's something else going on with the Tuesday with Toomey's crowd, and it's really something that is not like a Moral Monday movement, but it's using some of those aspects of that playbook where you have a different issue every week and you're rallying behind that issue.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And, you know, from everything I hear about this in different communities across the state, you know, not only is it that there's one issue, then this group of people shows up and then they disappear. And next week, there's another group shows up and then they disappear. But actually, people have been staying engaged, right? So people from one community might show up for LGBTQ issues, right? Some of those folks might show up next week, right, for First Amendment issues, right, to be the part of that. So people aren't going away, and this is one yet another way of people staying engaged.
We also had a lot of people from Northumberland County, Union County, Juniata County drive on the way down. You know, these Harrisburg is the closest metro area for some of these counties. Up in north central Pennsylvania, in that tier that people talk about, the northern tier or the T, and they came down from those counties to Harrisburg specifically for yesterday's action. And another thing I like to put in here is that a lot of these organizing this are also people now organizing stuff with their local Indivisible groups. So you have people from the Indivisible 4th District, which is my district, with Scott Perry, who's my representative, my congressman. So people are coming down here. So there's people organizing around the Indivisible stuff that are making out from Hershey, Harrisburg, and Berks County for this too. So there's a lot of different types of political movements moving in together and coming together for this Tuesdays with Toomey stuff. And then they're also going back to their home areas, their home congressional districts or townships, and are organizing there. One more thing I'd like to add, state representative I'm friends with, Stephen McCarter, on Facebook from Cheltenham area in the Philadelphia area. He said he put a picture up on his Facebook page, his personal Facebook page the other day, of the Cheltenham area Democrats. Over 100 people showed up to that. You know, imagine getting over 100 people out to a local Democratic meeting. This is usually 3 or 4 times the amount of people which normally show up.
Well, and this is happening all over the place. I think I mentioned on the show before that this is happening out in Emmaus for East Penn Democrats. What was a small Democrat club, right? A few people kind of have, as now there's like, they're getting 60, 70, 80 people per meeting. And that's just during the meeting. And you have a broader, even a broader number of volunteers that are kind of working to get the, you know, to organize. And they're doing everything from, you know, how do you run for office, right? How do you go about petition to do, you know, get these things done? What can you do kind of locally in the community? So this is all real good. And a lot of the folks that are involved with these, I don't know if this is true, the case you just brought up too as well, but in Emmaus, what we keep on hearing is that a lot of the folks that are involved are also the people that came out of like the Bernie Sanders campaign, well, Hillary Clinton campaign too as well, but much more on the progressive end of things. And they very much understand what they're doing as kind of like, you know, driving that wedge in the Democratic Party to kind of push for more progressive values. And I think that we need that now more than ever. I mean, I don't know if you saw, this is a national scale, but I think this is mirrored, in PA too as well. As on the Rachel Maddow show last night, she was talking about the fact that, you know, Tom Price is now, since he's been brought into the government, like another Trump freak has been brought into the government, his Senate seat his House seat, I'm sorry, is now up, right? And he only won, Trump only won in that district by kind of like 1.5 percentage points. It's in Georgia, right? You know, won by 1.5 percentage points in Georgia. This is a place where the Democrats could actually, put up a fight, right? Especially off your election with kind of a mobilized base. But the Democratic Party is basically, nationwide basically indicated, we got to kind of recognize that Republicans have held that district for a long time. So, you know, we're not going to do it again. So we don't think we're going to put any resources into this. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. And I think Maddow was directly on point last night when she was like saying, Democrats, if you are not fighting, right, and you are not engaging, then you are going backwards. Right. And that seems to be that kind of mentality of, you know, the Democratic state apparatus, as well as the National Party. But to see that these people are engaged at the local level is extraordinarily hopeful about what the future holds.
So Monday afternoon, I was hanging out in the newsroom, and there are a couple of old journalists who have been there for decades. And I was with Roxbury, a couple of these other journalists, and we had the same exact conversation. You know, how come the Democrats lost all these seats that were held by Democrats in 2010? You know, they lost all these seats and they haven't put up a single challenge. You know, one of the older guys, old timers in that building who's been there since 1975 as a journalist basically said, you know what, like who's a wealth of history, like about like political history in Pennsylvania, this guy, R.B. Swift, who writes for up in the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area. He had a really good point saying, you know, if I'm a Democratic activist, what's going to stop me from getting involved in this? Like, the Democratic Party is going to have to respond to these people or be left behind. Like, it's you know, these are seats that they should be winning, or the seats that they should be at least be contending in, you know, and challenging folks, and they decide not to because they lost the 2010 elections.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, and I think that, you know, it's going to be a rude awakening for those folks. And, you know, frankly, I have little sympathy for them. I mean, but when they start, you know, being challenged from within the party, you know, there will be primaries and things like that moving forward, especially as you have, basically youth in the state, like a lot of young folks are kind of getting actively involved and staying engaged. Right. So one of the things I wanted to talk about today is, you know, ahead of the intro is, you know, students at Pennsylvania State System universities are, you know, after they were involved with the ABSCUF strike, right, the faculty union strike in the this past fall, those students kept engaged, right? They showed solidarity with faculty, but then they were asking themselves the questions about what is it that we need to do to protect higher education? What do we need for our futures? And they formed like the PA Student Power Network, which is now present on virtually every state system university campus, in addition to other kind of private or state related schools across the Commonwealth. And this past week, right, the PA Student Power Network launched a $15 an hour minimum wage campaign for PASHA University campuses. $15 minimum wage for students and staff, anybody who works at the university, right? The first launch was out in Millersville. Westchester was supposed to have, and that was last Wednesday. Westchester was supposed to have an event the following Tuesday, but then we got the big snowstorm. So their event will be tomorrow. Right down at Westchester, here at Kutztown University, you have a KU Resist, which is part of that PA student power network. They're going to be holding a solidarity march, right? Kind of defend kind of minorities and immigrants, right, against the kind of what we're seeing in the Trump administration. This is really, really positive news, and they do not seem like they're going to be going away. So I'll give you an example. What's come out of that group is there's student organizing that's happening across the Commonwealth. It's happening on individual campuses, and they're looking to build skills. So, you know, coming up for March, right, a lot of these students, they'll be on break, you know, the week of March 10th through 14th. That'll be their spring break. And a lot of these students who have been activists as part of this movement are going to be going to basically a student power spring break camp, where they're going to kind of learn organizing tactics, research tactics, skills for mobilizing and talking with folks, or lobbying, a whole bunch of other issues that all go into building power. And so, you know, I can't tell you how encouraging that is to see that people are not just, you know, protesting out in the street and then going home, but they're thinking about how to build infrastructure. I mean, how often have we talked about that on this show and in the pages of Raging Chicken, about the need for progressives to think about their infrastructure and build their infrastructure, not just show up for protests, but then think about building something sustainably for the long haul. And that's happening.
Things I'd like to, a follow-up question I have about this KU Resist March plan for tomorrow. Is this in response to what happened last week with the Identity Europa firing that happened on campus with the white nationalist organization putting flyers up? Is this a response to that, or was this planned ahead of time?
I would say it's not only a response to that, but it is definitely, I think, focused the march for this week on that. So, for example, I mean, there had been issues on this campus for a while when it comes to issues of race, right? So, say African-American minority students on campus have been urging there to be more attention paid to the way that that their experience here at Kutztown is there. There's been a whole series of issues of minority faculty members not getting promoted, right? Or, not getting tenure at the same rates as white faculty members, you know? So there's been these issues in the background. And then when, Kutztown University is halfway between Reading and Allentown, two of the kind of larger minority populations and immigrant populations in the region. And one of the fastest growing ones. So we have students here that are coming, that are close to those communities that are being directly impacted by Trump. So I think all of that was part of the context. And when you saw the white nationalist stuff appear on campus, that just focused it 100%. I'll be there at the march tomorrow, and I'm going to be reporting on it, interviewing some of the students that are involved. So we're going to hear more about that too as well. What was actually kind of behind that and where that fits in with the overall picture of the student organizing. But, you know, it's like, in my mind, the best thing we could possibly be seeing right now is students getting active and getting engaged in their campuses.
I'd also like to give you the hat tip for your reporting last week. I actually made it into the regional newspapers and actually blew that issue up fairly substantially to the whole entire Lehigh Valley region. They figured out what happened with the Identity Europa stuff because of your reporting here at the Raging Chicken Press.
Well, thanks, Sean. But it, you know, and I think that that's always the hope, right? I mean, this is kind of, I think, when the reporting that we do, the things that we can bring, bring attention to and kind of shine light on, the hope is always that you're going to push this out into a broader venue. You know, I've been reading the Chain of Title by David Dayan, right? This book, and it's just an absolutely amazing, amazing book. And one of the things that's interesting about that, I've been thinking a lot about in his book, and he's basically charting the mortgage crisis, but it's through the stories of some just individual homeowners who just said something's wrong here, and they dug in, right, to expose the crimes that were going on and to the fraud that was going on in the banking industry. But anyways, you know, so they took to online communities and blogs to expose some of this stuff. And eventually, it took a long time, right, for people to start paying attention, but eventually those sites became the go-to sites for resources. So some of the earliest Mother Jones reporting, for example, looking at the foreclosure crisis and mortgage crisis in Florida, drew heavily from these blogs, right, that originally broke these stories. And this is an example. I mean, this is a pretty quick turnaround. White nationalists come on campus, right? I'm paying attention to what's going on. I see this stuff on Facebook. I follow up with some questions, do some research, and post it up. And then within a day or two, we've got the Reading Eagle and we've got Lehigh Valley Live that are investigating this further and looking at some of the background. And kudos to them to actually giving us a hat tip there in their own reporting. Because, sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes they say, oh, no, we found out by this own, when really, we know where they got it from. So that's always good to know. But all the more reason, this is again, how many times we make this kind of argument that this is why we need this kind of independent progressive media like Raging Chicken Press that's out there to do this kind of work. I mean, the more that we can shine a light on kind of injustices and abuses of power, right, and the daily happenings of the insanity that's going around in politics, the better it is for all of us.
Yep.
So I want to do one more thing before we move to the second part, take a break and go to the second part. So this weekend, we will be at the Keystone Progress Summit in Harrisburg. And if you have not been to the Keystone Progress Summit before, it used to be called just the PA Progress Summit, you might want to consider coming out. It starts on Friday. There's an all-day thing on Friday from 10 to 5, a building movement across politics for a grassroots campaign. That's will be going on. There's a whole bunch of workshops throughout the day. And then Friday night, you'll have Tulsi Gabbard will be speaking. And she was originally slated to speak on Saturday, but apparently there was a schedule change, so she'll now be speaking Friday night. But at the same time that's going on, there's also going to be a session on rural organizing as the key to winning the progressive mandate, which is going to be, in my mind, freaking awesome. Right? I was a little disappointed that Tulsi Gabbard had to switch to Friday to conflict with that, because I think that's precisely where a lot of our efforts should be placed.
But yeah, I really wish Keystone Progress would have switched that Friday night session out to somewhere else and try to fit that in, because that is definitely one of the things I am going to look forward to go to. I wanted to go see Tulsi Gabbard speak, but I really don't see her being the leader of the resistance, especially with some of the issues she's had with Donald Trump and coming out in support of Donald Trump's Syria policy. It would have been really great to ask her some questions on that, but I'm really not interested in seeing her. It seems like she's more of an opportunist, and that's just where she's trying to vie for a position in the Trump administration. That some like she looks like that's what she was doing early on, but look forward to going to that issue, that session Friday night with organizing rural Pennsylvania. It's one of the things that have struck me working out here in Harrisburg, where I bartend. It's a very popular brewery. I've actually had many encounters with people over the past couple of weeks, with people who have actually been reading our stuff for the past few years, and they probably put that in our name, the Reaping Chicken, to the face of where I work at. And there's a lot more Democrats out here that want to be organized that mm-hmm. aren't organized or right. haven't been organized, right. have been left behind, especially those on the West Shore. A couple of those, bunch of townships on the West Shore went 51% Hillary Clinton for the first time, went 51% Democrat. For the first time in the city's in those townships' histories. So even out here in central Pennsylvania, there's a groundswell of townships becoming more Democratic, more blue, but there's no Democratic Party out here to represent them.
No, that's right. And I think that's why that session is kind of so important. And I think that, with Tulsi Gabbard, I'm not as down on her in the same ways as or as much as you are, I think.
More cynical.
Well, I know. No, I'm not saying I'm a big fan of hers. But I don't think she was vying for a position in the Trump administration. I think that it was an opportunity that came up, and the Trump people were looking for some cover to make look like they're including Democrats too as well. And she was kind of closer to them on these kind of issues, which I fundamentally disagree with. But she has been touted out as one of the kind of, potential future leaders. And so it's actually, I would say, interesting to hear her speak. That would be kind of cool. But I agree with you is that I think where our energies need to be is not kind of like looking for the, who are we going to crown next with the progressive crown, right, to be a leader of a political leader, but rather so the organizing efforts that are going on and putting our organizing energies where they're needed. And exactly what you said. I mean, there's people all throughout, what gets disparaged as the T or Pennsylvania or all other kinds of stuff. But there's people all throughout those regions, right, that have just been virtually ignored by progressives in the left and the Democratic Party. And I think that, that's been a huge mistake. And the fact that the people are starting to realize this by doing things like organizing in the South, right? Organizing the south of the country, but then also organizing in central PA, central PA and northern PA. That's absolutely critical. So I'm looking forward to that session too as well. And I think, what I'm really hoping is that we're going to be able to get some folks from that session to kind of stay in touch with, to pay attention to the organizing efforts that are happening on the ground in their communities. That's always one of the difficulties that we have too as well, because we're kind of focusing right in our region. We'd love to have some folks that are from, kind of shale country, from central PA, in addition to you, obviously, that are kind of willing to kind of report on what's going on. So that should be really good. But if you're going to be out in the Harrisburg area, or you want to check out what this is, you can just go to paprogressivesummit.net. That's paprogressivesummit.net. You can see the agenda there. You can see the registration fees and all that kind of stuff. If you're in the area, stop by the Hilton in downtown Harrisburg and come on over to our table. We're going to have we've got a nice little table banner thing now. You're not going to be able to miss us. We have lots of buttons. But most importantly, we're going to have, for the first time, we're going to have a pretty substantial group of our writers that are going to be there. I think all but two, maybe. One maybe will be there. So you'll have an opportunity to kind of talk to some of the folks that you've seen in the pages of Raging Chicken and come on over and, just kind of shoot the shit with us. And we'd love to get an opportunity to meet you. We're trying to figure out whether or not to do a meetup on Friday. Friday with this Tulsi Gabbard thing and this other organizing thing. It's a little touch and go in terms of what the timing is going to be like. But stay tuned. We'll probably have some sort of get together at some point Friday night. We're just going to figure out where that's going to be. But anyway, so you'll come out for that. And last thing I want to say is that well, that all felt good, I guess. That's what I'm thinking. It's like, this was a good thing. And I'm almost regretting, not regretting, I'm a little hesitant to go into the second part of this podcast to talk about the insanity at the national level. But, you know, I think it's appropriate. We start off with stuff that's happening right in PA as we kind of get ready to head to Harrisburg to meet up with others to, you know, strategize about where to go forward. And the other thing I want to remind folks too, this is the one thing I wanted to say in addition, is that also our table is, we're going to be right there with Rick Smith. If you recall the Rick Smith show, labor oriented radio show, it comes out of Harrisburg. The Rick Smith show this weekend will be launching its first ever TV show, right? It's going to be Rick Smith show will now be aired 7 p.m. once a week on Free Speech TV, right? It's a 1 hour show once a week on Free Speech TV. It premieres this Saturday at 7 p.m. And, you know, make sure you tune into that and come on over and meet Rick. Rick's just an absolutely amazing, amazing guy. Someone who we've worked extraordinarily close with over the years. And we want to make sure that we get as many eyes on that show as possible. So please come over and check that out too as well. Anyways, we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll get into the depressing stuff. And then we'll close out. I'm holding the story about the fire extinguisher until the last segment. So we've got at least something to talk about. That's at least on the upside. So,
that might be a little bit depressing too.
Well, yeah, but you know, at least there's some comic value to it, I guess. All right.
There is.
All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1910. That was the day the uprising of the 20,000 officially ended in New York City. As many as 30,000 young, predominantly immigrant Jewish women went back to work after a bitter 11-week strike. They faced down their bosses, the police, and the courts. Arrests and fines drained much of the union's funds. Young union leaders like Clara Lemlich had been arrested 17 times and suffered 6 broken ribs. Women garment workers spent most of the winter running to union meetings, handing out leaflets, walking picket lines, raising funds, and distributing strike benefits. Many smaller shops settled in workers' favor early on in the strike. But by mid-February, closed shop demands kept many workers on the picket lines. The strike ended with partial but real victories. Garment workers won the 52-hour workweek, 4 paid holidays, employer-paid tools and materials, collectively bargained wages, and more. The International Lady Garment Workers Union started the strike with 100 members and had 20,000 by the end. All but 14 of the city's 353 shops signed contracts. But many garment workers continued to face unsafe working conditions like locked doors and flimsy or non-functioning fire escapes. Safety-related demands would not be addressed until after the 60,000-strong cloakmakers' strike the following summer. One of the largest factories and worst offenders was the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. Workers there went back with no agreement. 147 would die a year later in a tragic fire. In the aftermath, basic fire safety principles were finally established and implemented in New York State workplaces. These formed the foundations for many modern-day fire safety practices, like exit signs and doors, better ventilation, and sprinkler systems, fire alarms, and drills.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. So it's been another crazy week, folks. And I don't know, like I said at the beginning of the podcast today, we're doing this a couple days early because we're headed out to Harrisburg. And, you know, who knows what the Wi-Fi connection is going to be there. And Sean's pushed his hours around and stuff. So even in a short week, right, there is no break from the fire hose. Right. I mean, sure, everyone, if you're listening to this right now, I am sure that you've already heard about about Trump's national security advisor, Michael Flynn, former general Michael Flynn, he resigned, right? He resigned because, yes, as it turns out, he's been hobnobbing with Russian high officials, right up to the lead up to before Trump's inauguration. And the suggestion is that he was basically saying, hey, look, don't worry about those Obama sanctions. We'll take care of them for you, right? Whether or not he said that directly or not, we don't know. There's big questions out there now about, did Flynn actually lie to Mike Pence because of Mike Pence, vice president? He was out running the talk show circuit, and Pence was basically coming to Flynn's aid. No, he didn't do this. He didn't do this. So now there's questions are, well, did Flynn lie to Pence? Right. And if Flynn did lie to Pence, that was, at least that's the narrative that they're shopping around right now, that the problem is that Flynn was dishonest with us and we can't have that. Or do we find out that Pence did know? Right. And Pence was out there knowingly lying to the American public. Right. We don't know that yet. Or another scenario, apparently justice officials went and reported to chief counsel. Right. For the president, that Flynn, this is like about a month ago, that Flynn had been involved in these conversations with Russian officials, not only right before Trump took office, but during the presidential campaign itself. And the president, and this came out in New York Times reporting, and the president was, or at least the counsel was notified. Did the counsel sit on it? Right. And not tell the president. Right. Or did the counsel tell the president? And the president and the vice president and the whole cabinet said, we're just going to wait for this to go away. Right. I mean, talk about a shit show. It's like, here we go once again. Right. The guy has been in office for what, 24 days. Right. And now already the scandal is broken. And this is on the verge of, again, depending on what's in the intercepts that came out for the conversations, what is actually the content of those conversations? We're talking about someone who was a general in our military, right, who was at getting secure, like top secret briefings in the National Security Council. Right. And now it turned out he's in the back pocket of the Russians and committing treason. I mean, this is insane. I mean, Sean, I mean, really? This is how we started our week this week.
Well, I hear there's some pizza shops hiring in D.C., so maybe he'll find a job down there.
Yeah, well, he's probably going to go looking for that one pizza shop that is run by the Clintons with the secret child prostitution ring in the back, right?
Yeah, oh man, this is... I mean, it only took 25 days to have an Iran-Contra type scandal break out in your administration. I mean, at least like with Reagan, it took 6 years. I mean, like with Trump, it took 25 days for something like the size, at least the size of Iran-Contra, like maybe larger than that. Like, you know what I mean? Like a scandal to that degree break out within his administration, it only took 25 days, which is fucking ridiculous.
Well, and I think the only thing that the Trump organization's got going for itself is that it's only been 25 days, right? I mean, the one thing is that if this
didn't happen on day one, thank God.
Well, I mean, I'm saying it's like if this had gone on for 2 years, right? Then we would be talking about layers and depths of misdeeds, right? Of lying, of fraudulent claims, of law breaking, right? Of potential, treason, or the breaking of constitutional protect.
And there's also that Russian spy ship floating around off the coast of Delaware and New Jersey right now. Like, this is. I guess we're going back to like the Cold War. I don't know. I don't know where we're going. It's not the Cold War, but it's like, is Trump really falls into that thing that Trump is Vladdy's puppet. Like, you know what I mean? I put out something on Monday nights like, Jesus Christ, it's only Monday, but the SNL cold open is going to be so fucking hilarious after this week. Like, you know what I mean?
No, exactly. And I think that, and I'll tell you one of my concerns about that though, too, is like, this whole Cold War frame, right? We're in this war with Russia now. What's bizarre in my mind about this, or actually gives me a lot of caution, is that, okay, one, you've got Flynn doing this stuff, you've got Trump doing this stuff and all this. And then you start hearing for some Democrats, right? They're coming out and basically using the language of the Cold War to talk about Russia, right? In my mind, it's a way so that they can bolster their own national security kind of backgrounds to try to recall that aspect of the Cold War and see Russia as the evil empire, to put it in that kind of frame. But that's that I'm not ready to go there, right? And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Russia is good or anything like that. But what I am saying is that, like, you know, look, you should be going after the Trump Organization, right? You don't need to kind of, like, you know, you don't need a new enemy, right? In order to do that, your new enemy is sitting in the freaking White House, right? Not just over there kind of hanging out with Vladimir Putin, although that's happening too. So that's actually got me concerned, especially as you look at, you know, there's leaks that are coming out of the national security infrastructure right now. And what's part of those leaks, what we're learning is that there has been a massive amount of data collection from the NSA, from the CIA, and from the FBI. And we're finding out, which again, somehow I missed this, is that Obama, right before he left office, right, he kind of changed a rule, right, in Homeland Security, which basically said now the FBI and the NSA can share information, right? So this new rule gets put into place right before Obama leaves office, so to allow the NSA, right, to give their kind of, you know, surveillance to the FBI, right? That's crazy to me, right? And that's all happening in the background. And that's getting less attention, in part because of the scandal, right? But also because the Democrats, I think, are being a little bit too opportunistic here and not realizing that this is kind of a multi-layered problem. You've got an advanced security state and surveillance state, and that's getting a pass in the midst of, like, because we hate Trump so much. So there's a lot of stuff going on to kind of pay attention to what's happening here that's getting exposed as part of this investigation. In my mind, all the more reason why this needs to be an independent commission to investigate this stuff, because I don't trust the Democrats on this one either, right? I think they're going to use this to certain kinds of levers, but they're not going to want to expose too much about what's actually happening in terms of the surveillance state.
Yeah. No, there's a lot going on, and especially with I mean, we've suspected this going back into the election with Paul Manafort. I mean,
that's right.
Good I mean, point. you look at the people who Paul Manafort has dealt with. Paul Manafort also, you know, dealt with the Russians and dealt with the Ukrainians who were the Ukrainian government that did side with Russia, and he has a history of siding with, like, dictators like this, like, you know, like it. I mean, he was accused of this back in the this the reason why Manafort dropped out of this,
yes,
of the Trump campaign, because of this very issue.
That's exactly it. And, you know, again, I don't think that Manafort would say that. No, that's the reason why. But yeah, that's the reason why. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's also one of the things that, like, I was watching Matto last night, or the tail end of Matto going to Lawrence O'Donnell, which was Joy Reid, I think she was hosting that last night.
Okay, yeah, I'm in.
They were basically saying, like, listen, these leaks might not be coming from within the United States. These leaks can also be coming from our partners and allies who don't trust the Trump administration. There's a lot of, like, you know, the damage he has done to the national, to the intelligence gathering wing of our security apparatus, and, you know, people that, how our allies don't, how he's basically destroyed the relationships with our allies, our decades-long allies, and with sharing intelligence, you know, they might think that he is a spy for Russia. So, like, you know, if our allies think that Trump is a spy for Russia, who's to believe that this didn't come from one of our allies?
No, absolutely. I mean, the fact is that we don't know, right? We don't know where the leaks came from. There seems to be some indication in some of the reporting that's come out of the Washington Post and New York Times that some of the leaks are coming from our intelligence agencies, right? Or people within them. Don't know that 100%. But, you know, it's important that we get this right. And we don't try to put up kind of straw men for convenience purposes, because look what happened over in Russia when there seemed to be some indication that there were some people inside the Russian government that were cooperating with American and intelligence officials. Putin, right? Well, I mean, I'm going to make the claim, right? I don't think there's been direct evidence of this yet, but one of the guys who was suspected of leaking or was finding it was killed. Right, he was assassinated in the very way that other people, other, you know, under Putin's previous dissidents. Reign, right? Putin's previous reign, other folks, dissidents, have been assassinated, and so we're talking about, you know, kind of serious considerations here about, you know, people losing their lives over this stuff, and not to mention the potential of, you know, like a new renewed global war. this just goes crazy. And, you know, that all took place at the same time. I mean, I know you saw this stuff, but Trump is sitting down there having dinner with the, the guy, you know, the Japanese prime minister, openly talking about, you know, war and nuclear weapons and nuclear policy with Korea. Right, openly taking selfies with the guy who carries around the nuclear football. Right, I mean, this is a problem.
allowing his buddies who are not involved with the government to take pictures with this guy's nuclear football at Mar-a-Lago resort down in Florida, his Mar-a-Lago resort. Like, are you kidding me? Like, this is like, and then on top of that, he's having national security meetings in public.
Exactly. Pass the shrimp. By the way, what do you think about this weapon swap? Right? I mean, like, have another drink, blah, blah, blah. Oh my God. It's just crazy. But this is the, you know, this disorienting context that we're in right now. And there's just so much going on, you know, and one of the things that, you know, going back to this surveillance state and things like this, and what's kind of going on there. This is not exactly related, but I don't want to kind of scrunch this in the end of the segment, is that this is brand new reporting that came out today by Li Fang from The Intercept. Really just kind of took me back. Right. It didn't even come out today. I'm sorry. This came out on Monday. Right. I saw it first time today. Right. This came out on Monday by Li Fang from The Intercept. About net neutrality. So just as a quick primer, right, for those folks that are out there about what net neutrality is, net neutrality, all that means, right, is that basically everyone gets kind of equal access to the speed of the internet, right? The idea is that if you're plugged in, you know, Doylestown, Pennsylvania, or you're plugged in Wilkes-Barre, if you're plugged in Pittsburgh, right, or you're plugged in, you know, in one block versus another block, no matter who your service provider is, that you have access to that same bandwidth, and it should come at the same speed, right? That has been the way the internet has operated for the longest time. That's come under increasing pressure by cable companies, right, and internet service providers, for like Verizon and Comcast and things like this, who want to eliminate net neutrality. Basically, they want the ability to throttle your speed. So, for example, if you're watching their programs, right, that they want you to watch, they can speed it up. If you're watching programs from a competitor on the internet, they can slow it down. Right. Or you have a little show like ours right here where we're streaming, you know, we're kind of recording over the internet. Right. Well, we're not so much of a priority because we're not really a moneymaker for Verizon or Comcast. So we're not going to get the high speed access unless we want to pay boku amounts of money. Meanwhile, the people like the Comcast people and whoever potentially who are their buddies, their friends, the ones that are going to be supporting them, are going to kind of be reporting on them in a positive way. They can get throttled up. Right. So that's what net neutrality is meant to prevent, right? So the Obama administration basically changed the rules in the FCC, clarified the rules, I should say, the FCC in support of net neutrality. So basically treating it like a telephone company as opposed to some unregulated service, right? Just like in a telephone, you pick up the phone, right? You have, you know, your line is connected. Doesn't matter who your service provider is, you're getting the same call service, right? Close to the same call service, but you don't get to kind of be put on hold or kind of be put in a waiting queue for your call to get through because, you know, you went with a cheaper service as opposed to the more expensive one, right? That's kind of the idea. So the internet is supposed to be treated like that. What the Trump administration did, the Trump administration basically hired this guy to run the FCC, name is Ajit Pai, right? And basically he has moved very, very quickly and aggressively to roll back consumer protections and the regulations that were kind of created under Obama, right? The New York Times is a great piece on this that came out in February, like the 5th of February, called Trump's FCC Pick Quickly Targets Net Neutrality Rules and Going Right After Net Neutrality. And this is going to be a huge issue, especially for independent reporting and for voices that are not part of a major corporate entity to be able to keep up with this if they decided to throttle our speeds, right? This is all about internet freedom. And this is why Google, even for that matter, is on the side of net neutrality, because they recognize that if you want the internet to kind of be kind of an open space, that you have to basically have this kind of neutral playing field. So that's your backdrop. What Li Fang reported on, right? And this just kind of took me back. Right, so not only do you have this guy, Trump's FCC pick, Ajit Pai, basically pushing for the elimination of net neutrality rules in favor of Comcast and Verizon and the big internet service providers. Basically, what he reported on was that in a little known side letters or support for this legislation to eliminate net neutrality, in ways, this just blows my mind. You have a whole slew of civil rights organizations who are coming out in support of eliminating net neutrality, okay? And we're talking about, this is kind of as Fang reports it, I'll just kind of quote this paragraph. Quote, in a little notice joint letter released last week, the NAACP, Asian Americans Advancing Justice, OCA, formerly known as the Organization for Chinese Americans, and the National Urban League and other civil rights organizations sharply criticized the jurisdictional and classification problems that plagued the last FCC, a reference to the legal mechanism used by the Obama administration to accomplish net neutrality. Instead of classifying broadband as a public utility, the letter states, open internet rules should be written by statute. What does that mean? It means that the Republican-led Congress should take control of the process, the precise approach that is favored by the industry. Right? And you might just be slapping yourself in the head saying, well, wait a minute, why on earth would civil rights organizations be kind of behind this? Well, what Fang points out is that these organizations, some of their biggest funders is telecom. Right. And I'll give you an example of this. Telecom issues, again, from Fang's reporting. Telecom issues, however, are particular speciality of this court. So last week's letter was organized by the Multicultural Media, Telecom, and Internet Council, MMTC, a group funded by the telecom industry that has previously encouraged civil rights groups to oppose net neutrality. MMTC, in previous years, reported receiving about a third of its budget from industry-sponsored events, from industry-sponsored events. Its annual summit, which was held last week, was made possible by $100,000 sponsorships from Comcast and AT&T, as well as a $75,000 sponsorships from Charter Communications and Verizon. Down even further, quote, the NAACP, which signed letters opposing net neutrality both times the rule was proposed by the Obama administration, has named AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast as corporate fundraising partners. After the NAACP endorsed Comcast's merger with NBC, Comcast disclosed that the NAACP was one of the recipients of $1.8 billion in funds doled out to various community groups. Right? The reporting goes on. So the scenario was set up like this, right? Is that once again, not just in our politics, right, our representative politics in Washington, but we see the power that money is having to influence our civic organizations to take positions that could potentially be disastrous for those very communities. Why do I say that? But one of the reasons why the NAACP, according to the Fang's reporting, has kind of jumped in with telecommunication groups is because there seems to be some sort of they've been able to pressure the telecommunication groups to basically to get more diversity on TV, right? Get more diversity in hiring, right? To get more representational stuff. They've getting some, you know, some handshake commitments that maybe they're going to build out some of their infrastructure, like for high-speed internet and that kind of stuff. Of course, that's never happened, right? No matter how many times they say they're going to do this. So that seems to be kind of what may be motivating some of these groups to get behind it. But ultimately, what's speaking loudly here is the money. Right. And what happens if we lose net neutrality, right? And the Republicans get to govern that, then just look at what's happening in DC right now. Look at who's being targeted and look at who the rules are being written to benefit and who they're being written to kind of, hurt. And you could be damn well sure that that is going to be the internet, right? This is, you know, I keep on hearing, I hear this from my students, I hear it from the communities and things like that. So they said, thank God for the internet. Because it wasn't for the internet and it wasn't for a lot of this aggressive investigative work that's going on out there, we wouldn't know half of what we need to know to resist this this kind of, you know, nascent fascism that seems to be approaching in this country. So I know net neutrality is one of these kind of really technical, kind of policy wonky kind of things, sounding kind of things, but I can't emphasize enough how important it is to put pressure not only like on our elected officials, but on our civic organizations. Things like the NAACP and other kind of civil rights organizations should not be getting in bed with Republicans in order to kind of get rid of net neutrality. Just why we need to put pressure upon them. We need to put pressure upon our unions. We need to put pressure upon every organization that claims to have some sort of link to progressive communities to ensure that they do not kind of get in bed with these neo-fascists that are occupying our White House right now. And I, you know, don't want to put too fine a point on it if I haven't already. But, you know, this is in our hands right now. So let's not take our eye off the ball in any venue because, you know, and you know, all kudos in the world to Li Fang. I mean, I love Li Fang's reporting. He does is absolutely outstanding investigative work. For him to put this out, again, it bucks the trend. And this is, again, this is one of the benefits of The Intercept, is it bucks the trend of kind of looking at media that goes, it only goes kind of, you know, against the other side. You know, The Intercept has been doing a bang up job of really kind of digging in, investigating and, you know, following the money. So, you know, I hate to go all wonky, Sean, but that's, you know, I think this is a really, really important issue. And I really am hoping that we're going to be seeing more reporting on this.
Yeah, no, it just amazes me. But this is the same issues we've seen with civil rights groups coming out in support of charter schools, even though that the charter schools are mining and pilfering, and it's just a mechanism for neocolonialization in poor areas to just mine the wealth out of these areas. You know, that's basically what these people are supporting. It's a form of neocolonialization, but they're getting their cut of the money coming out. So, you know, we'll turn a blind eye to it and let them pilfer our wealth and pilfer our commons, even though we get our cut.
No, that's exactly right. You know, and in some ways I can get it. I can get inside the mentality of the folks from those organizations, right, about why they would get in bed with the telecom and things like this, and why they kind of want to push it forward, in part because, you know, the Democratic Party has basically sold out a bunch of their interests and their concerns, right? And they're looking for any way they can to kind of respond directly to their community. But it's, you know, it's like a deal with the devil, right? You might get something in the short term, but over the long haul, you're going to pay the price. You know, we all eventually got to reckon with our sins. So let's keep an eye on this one. So listen, we're coming up to another break here. Sorry for kind of going on about this one, but this one really got in kind of under my craw this morning when I was first reading it. And I wanted to make sure that we put that on everybody's radar. So we come back after the break. We're going to kind of talk about fire extinguishers at the Capitol. You know, just kind of, you know, maybe revel in the fact that we're all going to be hanging out together in Harrisburg this coming weekend. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this.
We are the resistance. We are living proof. They will know what happens. If they don't tell the truth, we will rise up tall. Gather in the streets of every state capital. We will rise up tall. The aching of our feet won't slow us down, no, not at all. This is how it all gets started. Secret votes behind closed doors. While they MAGA in the closet. Getting richer off the poor. We will rise up tall. Gather in the streets of every state capital. We will rise up tall. The aching of our feet won't slow us down, no, not at all. Throw our healthcare in the garbage. Blame it on Planned Parenthood. They must know what they have started. Ah, we won't be misunderstood. We will rise up tall, gather in the streets of every state capital. We will rise up tall. The aching of our feet won't slow us down, no, not at all. The aching of our feet won't slow us down.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. And as usual, Sean, we're nearing the end of the show and I'm freaking exhausted. exhausted from the rage. But I have to say, I'm also encouraged by the organizing. So that's a good thing. So, you know, as a way to kind of close out today, maybe on the up note, well, maybe not an up note, but at least something has some, you know, potential comic relief. You brought this up before. I actually want to talk about one more thing too as well after this, but you brought this up before, but there was some security concerns in the Capitol because of drunk guy with fire extinguisher. Please, please let us know what the hell this is about.
Yeah. So the Sunday in the morning at like 2 o'clock in the morning, there's a severe security breach of the Pennsylvania State Capitol. People aren't really talking about like a severe security breach, but I think it should be put in that way. It was a severe security breach. This guy, 27 years old, who was from Gettysburg, was in Harrisburg drinking all night with his girlfriend. They got into a fight. And somehow this led him to go through a window in the House of Representatives side of the Capitol building. And he didn't trip off any alarms. He was roaming the building for about 10 minutes. And the police in the building didn't hear him until he threw one of those big wooden signs down the flight of stairs and made a loud noise. And when they came up, they saw that there's a big plume of smoke. He discharged a whole entire fire extinguisher canister in the Senate side, and the Senate was actually closed down all day Monday because of this happening. And this guy's getting charged with 4 felonies and full restitution, which is anywhere between $10,000 and $40,000. So, you know, some people think that might be a little severe for this crime, but yeah, we in the media were talking about this, and this is actually something that should be considered very serious because what if this guy wasn't drunk? A local news reporter asked that. Say, what if this guy wasn't drunk, and what if he was, you know, doing something more nefarious than that? You know, like how come no alarms picked this up? No sensors went off, and it pretty much raises the question of how secure the Capitol building really is. I know, like I'm not a big fan of the police state, but for someone who was inside the Capitol, it's something that I've thought about for a while, especially with my press badges. We were talking about this, right? So go through this process of getting your press badge. What do you have to do? You have to fill out a form, right? You have to get a state certified background check online, which takes like less than 5 minutes. You pay the $8 for that. You pay the $10 for the form. If you get approved by DGS, the Department of General Services, they then give you your badge. This badge that you get is a blue badge printed off by the Commonwealth. You show the people it's security and you go right through the metal detectors. You don't have to go through the scanners. And it's the type of thing where I'm allowed to go in there with my backpack not being checked, right? My backpack doesn't go through the x-rays.
Right.
And basically this is a trust thing. They're trusting me not to have something on me that can kill someone because I went through the proper credentialing process. And we had this discussion saying, what if, you know, you're a lobbyist, right? You get fired from your job because a bill didn't pass and your ID does not expire for another 5 or 6 months. And you decide to go into the Capitol one day with a bunch of guns underneath your jacket and just shoot the place up. Like, these are really serious conversations that a lot of us had the other day because of how unsecure the capital is. It's something that's pretty serious that we all like took us back to reality. Like, hey, what if this guy snuck into the building 2 o'clock at night, plant a bomb, and didn't go off till Monday morning?
Right, right.
What would happen? Like, what would the news coverage then be like? Bomb goes off in state capital.
No, absolutely. And I think that, first of all, let me say I'm really freaking bummed out that she took this into a serious direction. I really wanted to talk about the guy freaking throwing this fire extinguisher and how funny that was. But no, here you go. You got to talk about the serious. No, I'm just kidding because you're right. I mean, this is.
Well, this is like a workplace for me.
No. I get that, right? But that's what I'm saying. It's like, I mean, you're right to kind of, talk about the seriousness of this. This is one of these perfect examples, right? About how does one rationally respond to that, right? So if you take, for example, something like, as huge as 9/11, right? Or anything like this, it's always that balance of kind of, well, how do you actually kind of deal with appropriate security measures without then kind of like just basically giving full hand to the police state, right? And then locking down the Capitol from public access even more than it's before, right? Like in my mind, right? It's okay, if you want to make sure it's secure, like what this guy did, right? Was not about metal detectors and all this other kinds of stuff. He snuck into the windows, right? How the hell did that happen? How do you get into a window in the Capitol building, right, without it setting off some sort of alarm? So that's kind of like that. That's number one. But number two is like, say for example, if they wanted to up, security of checking people coming in and things like that, then guess what they're going to have to do, right? To do it in the way that ensures public access is they have to hire more people and have more points of entry. Right. Because you can't right now. I mean, you know, this at any time that it's that there's something major going on in the Capitol, it's an absolute pain in the ass getting in there. Right. Because the
lines also like a bunch of there's a bunch of side doors I know to go to where there's one security guard and no one else will go there. So it's like I can go into the House side, go into those doors on the House side and just show them my badge and I don't have to deal with that. But like, yeah, it's getting into the Capitol. A lot of people don't know where the other side doors are at, and it's a huge pain in the ass when there's a line of 50 people trying to get through the one metal detector in front of the Capitol building.
Exactly.
When there's metal detectors that no one else uses throughout the rest of the building because they don't know where the other entrances are at.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. But like one of the things we were talking about, like one of the things maybe we can do is like, hey, if you have a bag on you and you have a blue badge, you get to go to the front of the line, put your bag through the metal detector, and then you go right through.
Why don't you just have a press line? What I mean? I mean, you have it, instead of going to the front of the line, you have one particular area that's particular for, if you've got a pre-cleared pass or whatever it is like this, you go the other way. Well, let me ask you this. Is there any reporting about why this guy chose the Capitol?
No, supposedly he was drunk, he got in a fight with his girlfriend and he went and made the biggest financial mistake of his life.
I'm just like, I'm just like, goes through my head is like, so what goes through your mind? You get in fight with your girlfriend and then your next thought is, hey, let me sneak in through a window in the Capitol and trash the building.
Well, so I did search this guy on Facebook. He was shockingly, he was not smart enough to keep his profile private. So there's pictures of him shooting off an AK-47, supporting Donald Trump, and also with a Confederate flag in the college party dorm room. So this person is your anti-government type, you'll say, like a Trump,
okay,
like a Trump dissident, right? One of those Trump dissidents out there. I've honed in my eavesdropping skills in the local coffee shops and was listening into a conversation with a top level staffer, and basically like. He's like, we have people in the state who do much less, college-age students. Like, you have a girl who goes to a sorority party, 19 years old. She's an education major. She gets busted for underage drinking. You just ruined her whole entire life right there. When really, like, we shouldn't be ruining someone's life because of an underage drinking incident. But then you have someone like this who commits 4 felonies, who will probably get no jail time for what he did, and he'll have to pay some sort of restitution for, potentially destroying pieces of work, art pieces. They had to get they had to get a crew in there right away, a cleanup crew in there.
Wow.
As soon as that happened, to remove all the paintings in that area.
Well, see, that what you just said there about this guy's background, that kind of fills in the gap for me. Like, you know, in my head, I had, you know, that puts a different layer of seriousness on it too as well, right? That you've got somebody who's actually, why he goes to the Capitol, connected to kind of an anti-government ideology, then that puts even a more finer point on it again. That, you know, that's nuts. That's nuts.
Yeah, so, and you have, I mean, like out here, you have those white nationalist groups, you have those... Right. You have those militia groups. You have anti-government types out here. So what's going to stop a lone wolf from going through this process and, you know, doing something like this in the Capitol? It was a reality check for a lot of us in the Capitol. I mean, it's just like one of the inherent risks we have for being in that building every day. I mean, this is that's a workspace for me. I do my work in the rotunda. I do my work down in the cafeteria. I go and hang out in the newsroom. I go into the media center. Like, I know that building inside and out. It's not like I'm there like as your average tourist. To me, that's a workspace. As is the coffee shop down the street. It's a workspace,
right?
You know, and it's kind of like, it's worrying. Like, we were talking, me, Roxbury, and a couple of other like really conservative lobbyists about this. You know, they were just as worried about this too. Like, what's this guy? This is something like where something serious should happen. You know, how come this guy wasn't caught right away? How come he was allowed to roam for 10 minutes? You know, if he never threw that sign, how long would he have been in there? Like 20, 30, 40 minutes with someone doing with like that. It raises those questions. Like, these are soft targets. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
sure. Right. And I think that it also raises the question, though, you know, too, as well, in addition to like how you respond to that potential, you know, security issue. But it also just shows you about the need to kind of nip in the bud this kind of crazy right-wing nonsense that's out there that kind of occupies people's heads such that, you know, they kind of go off their rocker, whether it's, you know, through alcohol, drugs, or just, you know, some sort of break, that, you know, they go around looking for targets. So that's some good. So let me ask you this, Sean. We don't have time to get into this full story. But I, if you would tease this up for us a little bit, right before we went on air today, to record, you told me about this, thing in Doylestown. Can you just give us a sketch of what this goes on? Cause this is now, as we've been recording, as we've been talking today, this is like boring its way into my skull. It's gonna breed rage. I can feel it coming already, but can you just give us a little sketch of that? This is something we're going to have to follow up on and get into another point.
Okay. So, yesterday, I was on Facebook and about like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Shaughnessy Naughton posted something. Hey, who wants to run for Doylestown? Who wants to run for the school board, as Central Bucks school board? You know, and because supposedly a couple of the members came out in front of last night's meeting, which did occur, came out as climate deniers over a textbook approval. And the textbooks that were in question were approved by the school board. This was like one of the largest attended school board meetings because of the outcry on social media about this. And one of the school board members went on TV and said, you know, I want both sides of the issue discussed here. Now, let's just keep this in perspective. You know, you want both sides of this issue discussed. This weekend, right? It's 80 degrees in Denver. It's 99 degrees in Oklahoma. And it's going to be 65 fucking degrees out here in Harrisburg for the Progress Summit. So 65 degrees, there's a heat wave going across the country right now in the middle of February. But we want to talk about both sides of this issue. So let's.
No, I mean, I think, look, I'm fine.
It makes you want to put your head through that cinder block wall behind you.
Well, that's exactly it. It's like, let's talk about both sides, right? First of all, it's about 97% of the world's scientists, right?
Let's get 100 people in the room.
Are in agreement. Yeah. Well, no. Let's do better than this, right? 97% of the world's scientists are in agreement that, you know, humans are causing climate change, right? And this is potentially catastrophic, right? Number one, that should be common sense. And there's this like little 3% on the fringe that's out there. So why don't we talk about them like that? Right. I mean, you got the put the 100 people in the room. Let's get it 97-3. That's one way of doing it. Right. The other way is going to say like, OK, let's talk about what the science has to say about this in the textbook. Right. Walk through the science and all that kind of stuff and then say, And then there's 3% of nut jobs that are out there that are attempting to kind of like deny climate change because they're being funded by Exxon and the kind of the and big oil and the fossil fuel industries in order to kind of keep their profits going. If we want to talk about all sides of this, let's do it.
All right, let's go back to that John Oliver skit.
That's right. Let's get those 97 to 3 people in the room on the one side, then that's fair and balanced. And then we can get our background and say who's funding what, right? And let's look at the funds that behind this, because like there's enough reporting and there's enough kind of not even enough reporting, but there's enough facts that are out there to show that who has funded the climate change industry, Exxon, right? Oh yeah, the guy who's, you know, our Secretary of State right now, right? That guy, right? He's the one who helped fund the climate denial industry that's out there through the Heartland Institute and a bunch of other folks, right? They're the ones that are bolstering these claims. Let's talk about a media infrastructure like Fox News, right? That wants to put on like some wimpy climate scientist over here. And then the other kind of reasonable guy who says, this is not what's going on. You guys are lying to us. China is creating it. You know, let's talk about that media infrastructure that's giving a false appearance of equivalencies here, that's creating kind of, you know, again, we go back to this gaslighting. So everybody gets confused about what is true and what's not. This is a bad situation. So the reason why I wanted to highlight this is because you're looking at the Doylestown School Board, right? Or for Upper Bucks, right? This is happening Central Bucks. You're talking about something that's happening in our backyard. This is not, you know, the crazy backwoods in Texas or Oklahoma that we always hear about on the national news. This is happening down the road, right, in eastern Pennsylvania, right? We're talking about something about 40 minutes outside of Philadelphia. Doylestown is kind of like, you know,
in a really progressive liberal area.
Exactly.
Doylestown, New Hope. New Hope's a different school district, but that whole entire area is very liberal, very progressive. But you do have those rural outliers in the suburbs and like the more less populated parts of that Bucks County. But it just goes to show you, yeah, this is in our own backyard. I mean, these are people. This is why you have to get involved with your local Democratic Party and why you have to take it over. This is why you have to get on your school boards. You know, I don't believe in like getting on your school board will change the world, but it will change your community. It will change, you know, like maybe it'll foster some candidates and start building up your bench to start running people for the state government who, you know, the bench in the Pennsylvania Democrats isn't really stellar. We just keep on electing a bunch of old people to office while the Republicans have been really good at this by recruiting, by getting 26-year-olds, 25-year-olds, 23-year-olds elected to the state house. You look at Martina White, you look at Justin Simmons, you look at all these other people, the reason why they're winning is because they're getting 20-some and 30-some-year-olds in office, not people who are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Exactly. And, you know, and you're right. You know, getting on your school board might not change the world, right? But, you know, and this is far less sexy than going out and changing the world. But it just might prevent, right, the right-wing nut jobs from taking over your education. And if that is not enough, right, I mean, I don't know what else is. I mean, at the very least, you get in there and kind of run for stuff and take your turn, right, and get a community of people. So you're not just one person who's stuck with that job, but you build up a community of folks that are willing to go in there and take their turns on you know, in your school board, your local city council, and so on, to prevent the crazy right from taking over and gutting all those things that is public in our community. So it's pretty nuts. Anyways, just about coming to the end. Sean, I'm looking forward to this weekend in Harrisburg. I'm going to be bringing up some stuff, I think, from hopefully if I get the time between now and the time I got to get out there to stop by Free Will and bring up some sours from Free Will to kind of share around with the Raging Chicken folks. It should be pretty cool. I'm also going to be on, I'm assuming this is still going to go. Last I heard, we're still go for this. Friday morning, I'm going to be on WITF out of Harrisburg, and we're going to be talking about political discourse in the age of Trump. I can get back posting more details on that once I've got them. I'll put them up on our Facebook page and so on. So it'll be a busy day on Friday as we get our table set up in the afternoon. And we look forward to seeing some of you at least out there and, you know, finding these kind of points of connection and networking and building our organization in power. So I'll see you in a couple days, Sean.
I'll see you later. Have a good one.
All right, you got it. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We're out of here. We'll be back next week, but keep an eye on our Facebook feeds and maybe even a special podcast that we'll be putting up directly from Harrisburg, the Keystone Progress Summit this weekend. And don't forget, 7 p.m., Free Speech TV, Saturday night, the Rick Smith Show is going national. 40 million homes, folks. This is Kevin Mahoney once again signing off. Till next time. See ya.